Well, the first half, Gina's going to tell us all the details of her 12-hour walk around. That's right. She did it. Also, I have a Duran Duran song that I hate more than any other Duran Duran song that I've rediscovered over the weekend. Author and columnist Joel Stein is going to join us to recap some stories on a Man Show story you're going to love. We'll do all that right after this.
Hey, Friday Night Lights fans. It's Not Only Football, Friday Night Lights and Beyond is an episode-by-episode discussion of the hit TV series Friday Night Lights, hosted by yours truly, Scott Porter, who played Jason Street on the show, and my two wonderful co-hosts.
Me, Zach Guilford, a.k.a. Matt Saracen.
And me, Mae Whitman, a.k.a. someone who wasn't on the show, but really, really loves it a lot.
We will also bring on some special guests, answer your questions, and tell you about what's going on in our lives today.
It's Not Only Football, Friday Night Lights and Beyond, coming soon wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose!
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is The Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, comedian Jeff Dunham and journalist Joel Stein. With Gina Grad on news. And now, he almost had to cancel the taping because he broke a nail. Adam Carolla.
Why tonight? Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but get it on. Amanda, get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. I love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And bald what?
Oh.
Bald Brian's got the bad flu.
Yeah,
so he's
under the weather.
Not coming in. Much to talk about today. So excited for Gina and proud of Gina.
Thank you.
For doing her 12-hour walkabout. She took the challenge. Definitely had an out. I was supposed to go this Saturday as well. I then used the excuse that I was going to be in Malibu and I didn't want to walk up and down the PCH and want to walk in the hills.
I
bumped it into this coming Saturday. Somebody promptly tweeted me and said, I did the 12-hour walk. I did it in Malibu and I went in the hills. And I thought, canyons are steep, man.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of cars zooming around.
Yeah.
And that's a ballsy move to whoever tweeted me that. But so Gina heading out. 12 hours of walking, the challenges, leave the house, put the phone on airplane mode, and no conversing, no earbuds, no music, no podcast. You're allowed to stop. You can rehydrate. You can get a coffee. You can get a sandwich, but then be on your way.
Yep.
And it's something that most people would not look forward to, although I can see the inherent gains of it.
Yeah, I did look forward to it.
That's amazing. And it's also an indictment of your life.
Thank you.
But I was like, there was speculation. Is Gina going to do it? And I remember throughout the day on Saturday, I was like, God, it's like it's 11:30. Gina's been out for 5.5 hours now, you know, and I would check in at 2 o'clock. And then I became envious as I would look at the clock and it was like 3:15. I was like, oh, she's got to be almost done by now. So,
and the weather, it was perfect. Picture perfect.
So remember, this was brought on by a guy who walked across Antarctica.
Not as perfect weather.
And what truths, what memories, what feelings may you have if you're just alone with them for that period of time? Colin O'Brady. So
that's right.
Interviewed him for Take a Knee. So I was inspired. So
yeah.
Walk us through the day, literally and figuratively.
Sure. Well, to be fair, and I think because you were like the first person I had to notify, because I was really wanted you to know that it had happened. It was more like a little over 11 hours because I basically did sun up to sundown, about a half hour past sundown. So it was 6:23 to 5:43. And it's like when you wake up in the middle of the night and you see the clock, those numbers are like burned into your head. So that was my walkabout time. That was me heading out in the morning. It was very light out. Like the sun comes right on up. So I did not have any worries. The biggest question everyone has asked me was, did you map your route? And I thought, Fuck no. The whole point of this is to feel free. I mean, mm-hmm. It was for me anyway. I don't want to be thinking about those types of things. I don't want to be distracted by a route. Mm-hmm. So I just started walking. And you know the area. I was basically Sherman Oaks, Studio City. Never more than 3.5 miles from the house, 4 miles from the house.
How much mileage did you cover?
Like miles wide? Like how many? Over almost 21 miles, over 50,000 steps.
I guess they say the people that are moving at a clip with purpose will get 28, 30 miles
excuse me.
Out of there. So 21, I'm only going off of what people said. 21 seems on the lower end of mileage.
Thank you.
What percentage of time were you walking versus resting, which
That's
is fine or just...
That's,
standing still or eating or
that's
whatever.
That's really interesting because another big thing that I was excited to talk about was I really didn't stop very often because, first of all, I like to move at a decent clip. And when you have a 7-year-old, you can't. So I liked – even when I was sore, I was moving at the same pace. And then when it would really start to hurt, sitting down wasn't worth it because it was really hard to stand up. Mm. So it's easier just to kind of mosey and kind of keep walking. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm a slower walker than I thought. I felt like I was moving at a pretty nice pace.
I don't know, Chris. Whoever tweeted me who did the Malibu walk, I think got to 28 miles
You're
or something like that.
I avoided interacting with people I never went into a restaurant or a shop. Mm-hmm. I forgot my moleskin. Do not forget your moleskin. About 4 hours into it, I had pretty bad blisters. So I walked all the way home, which was pretty far, put on my moleskin. Nobody was home. Nobody talked to me. Put on my moleskin, made myself a sandwich, ate it standing up over the counter, and headed right back out. So I wasn't even home 12 minutes, which was good because then I knew I wouldn't talk to anybody.
35 miles, Derek Spartz.
I call foul.
That seemed longer than I even remember.
That's crazy.
Walk through the hills. Sorry, Jane.
Are they fucking Iron Man?
This is about you, baby.
I feel like it is. That can't be. This is some hardcore motherfucker. I represent the normies.
That's right.
The regular folk. If I can do it, you can do it, people. So congratulations to you, but that's not us. So one thing I absolutely noticed was how much easier it was walking without headphones. I wasn't fumbling. I wasn't losing Bluetooth connection. I didn't have to worry about what podcast was coming up next or if I liked this song. I felt so free of all that. The colors literally felt brighter. Like everything felt more significant. The birds were chirping. It was a really nice, quiet, beautiful day. And I just took in so much stuff that I would have missed just by, I don't know, just being dulled. My sense is being dulled by the music or comedy show or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'd say for the first 3 hours, I really hope Brian reviews this movie. I'd say for the first 3 hours, I thought nonstop about Don't Worry, Darling, because I had just watched it the day before. Mm-hmm. You know, the Olivia Wilde, Harry Styles.
Was it good?
I watched it twice over the weekend.
Wow.
So I very much enjoyed it. Yes, there are plot holes. Yes, there are tropes. Still very enjoyable. Thought a lot about that movie. And then after that, I was like, I'm not going to force it. I'm just going to walk. And if something pops into my mind, it pops into my mind. About 6 hours in, I started thinking about shit that I don't know if I've ever thought about. I remember it happening at the time. I don't remember thinking about it happening. I started having this barrage of interactions with elementary school teachers that I never would have even thought about again. I wouldn't have even thought of their names. And it ended up being not in any linear order, but it ended up being back and forth between my fourth grade teacher, who would always tell me how much she adored me because I would, quote, have something nice to say even if the sky was falling. Mm-hmm. And my sixth grade teacher, who told me how frustrating it was to teach me and how lazy I was. And so I kept toggling between Miss Moffat and Miss Cadwallader back and forth. And it really, it just, I don't know. Those two were just everything they sort of represented to me at the time, how my life was with, going through my parents' divorce in sixth grade and not having the attention span that I would later on Ritalin and that sort of thing. And I guess I was frustrating, but she wasn't a fan of mine.
I just spoke to my sister, and it's such a big deal, which is when we were transitioning from the hippie school to the system with bells and tardies and lining up and you know, sounding off.
Sure.
For it was so regimented from where we came from, 70s, Billy Jack, you know, school.
First name teacher.
Somebody's house in Silver Lake. Go there and make shit out of, you know, pottery.
Accredited?
Make pottery. And I don't think anything was anything. But when we had to transition – and by the way, school, when you were at a hippie school in the 70s, school – that's an institution. That's, you know, analogous to going to prison. It's got a fence around it.
Right.
All the schools out here are very federal facility looking. I mean, the doors are locked. They have that weird reinforced glass with the screen in it. You know what I mean? Like, when you see where they're dragging Linda Hamilton to and like Terminator, you know, that's what the halls of every school that was built in the 30s that I went to looked like.
High school was literally army barracks.
Yeah, they were like fortified with a fence around it. And so when we were thinking of going from the Billy Jack, you know, free range, chuck a dirt clod, call your teacher by the first name, school to this,
to the
it was like, we're going into the system.
Yeah.
And I got Mr. Backus, who was the cool teacher.
Nice.
I got the fifth grade teacher, Mr. Backus. That's the one everyone, sense of humor, funny, you know, sort of encouraging, kind of knew I was a shit student, but he kind of marveled at my physicality because I was better at everyone at all the sporting stuff. And then my sister got Mrs. Parker, the 50s throwbacks.
The old bag.
The old bag snob. You march yourself, young woman, right into. And that was it for her.
Yeah.
She was like.
That was the path you were on.
That was it. She was dropping out of the eighth grade 2 years later.
Yep.
Like literally just got the shit teacher, fucked up the trajectory. This shit is bad. Mrs. Parker hates me. I don't belong here. Done. And then I got the cool guy. It was like, I got Mrs. Harvey the next year, who wasn't the cool guy, but I'd made it into the system because I've sort of had a soft landing with Mr. Backus.
Yes, absolutely. And ours was a sort of a hybrid of that because we didn't have walls. So all the classes were open. So for little kids with ADD, it was a fucking nightmare. And we didn't have bells, but there was a lot of like lining up and sit down and shut up. But it was just carols. You know, are carols even a thing? Go sit at the carol. It's time out. Sit at the carol.
Oh, no. We had the corral for the donkeys.
Right. This is similar.
Yeah.
So like teachers, and once you got to fifth, sixth grade, you could see over them. You just watching all the classes. It was a big open room, very hard to learn. And that's why I never talk about it because frankly, I have massive imposter syndrome. How I made it into fucking Mensa when I did all the regimented testing with a psychologist. It's a point of pride to me because I didn't think I was stupid. I knew I was stupid. It was not up for debate. Gina was nice. She was fun. She was caring. She cracked a joke every once in a while, but smart she ain't.
So the feelings,
that was a big deal.
It took about 6 hours.
To get to that point. And then it was so funny because I've lived here for almost 20 years, and it's very diverse. The names are diverse. The culture's diverse. I just got flooded with the names of the children from Kansas. You had so many. If you were a boy, your name was Jason, Matt, or Ryan. If you were a girl, you were Megan, Beth, or Katie. Maybe Lindsay.
Did it open you up to, like, when I took mushrooms for the first time, I did see the Lee Press-On nail commercial, and I was like, we're putting weird bloody claws on our tips of our fingers like an animal or something, and this is attractive. And I was deconstructing things because I'd gotten so far away from the basic reality because I'd been altered. But I would imagine there was some of that going on in this journey as well.
Funny you should say that, because the one thing I wasn't going to mention, because it sounds so dumb now, I became obsessed with while I was walking. It's going to sound insane. Don't know why it was, I really hammered down, but my one high moment was probably 8 hours in. And I started thinking about like, okay, when people say like, no bullshit, no snark. When people say, let's make America great again. What is the time that America was great? And what are we hearkening back to? When I was really trying to really, really dissect this, and I was thinking about Don't Worry, Darling, how everything's like this perfect 60s Palm Springs, perfect. I would like to live in that. But and I would like all cultures to live there with me. So what is it? And I thought, I love that aesthetic. What are we missing? A good aesthetic and etiquette. And then I became obsessed with the portmanteau aestheticate. And if we could get back to a really great aestheticate without all the hate and the bullshit and the tribalism, we could really live in a perfect society. And that was about around 4 o'clock. I started thinking about that and nothing else.
That was about 8 hours in.
Yeah.
And were you sore? Were you tired?
Very. So the soreness started about 4 hours in on the outside of my legs. Mm-hmm. Then they moved to the front of my legs. Then they moved to the inside of my thighs. That was mm-hmm. the order it went for me. Once I put the moleskin on, my feet were fine the entire time.
You just put it over your heel where it's rubbing?
And around each individual toe.
Mm.
And the side of your big toe. Mm-hmm. And that way, it was fine all day. But yeah, my legs are really sore, which was why I kept walking. Because when you're sore and you sit down, it's very hard emotionally and physically to get back up.
What did you bring with you?
I had my backpack, this little canteen, a thing of beef jerky that I think I forgot. I want to do all of the reads and ads for this company. It was called Kalahari mm-hmm. air-dried beef, because I eat mm-hmm. beef now. Oh! That's all I ate. That and a sandwich around 11 o'clock. I'm obsessed with this beef jerky. I mm-hmm. really want them to do reads for us. I really want them to be a partner. I found it at Gelson's.
You didn't amazing. Have to do a sock change?
No, because I wore the socks that Vinny told me to get called Darn Tough mm-hmm. and they're wool and they were fine.
And so you got in as it was getting dark or a little after dark.
I made sure I was in my neighborhood by the time the sun went down so I could mm-hmm. walk a little bit more because I hadn't hit 50,000 steps and there was no fucking way I was going to go in under 50. Mm-hmm. So it started to get dark. That was the first time I pulled my camera out to take a picture as I was walking home. I get inside and my husband makes a sign for me and had this little, he's like, I'm sorry, I didn't think to like actually buy you anything, which I obviously didn't need. He made a cute little sign.
Were you,
hung it up in the
kitchen.
Did
you sleep like a baby that night?
I don't remember falling asleep. I don't know when it was. I have no memory of it. He said I could eat anything I wanted. We ordered chicken parmesan, but I didn't have the pasta. I had the salad with it, and I don't remember falling asleep. I was so goddamn sore the next day. It was very hard to get up. And remember, I had a major surgery in the spring.
Right.
I felt exactly the same, like walking all slow, crouched over. He's like helping me, but I was fine. It actually feels much better to keep moving than
all
to
right.
lay down.
Well, you're the first person to complete the challenge
it felt
here.
Great. And now I make this proclamation. I decided 11 hours is, I don't want to do that all the time. I want to do a 4-hour walk at least once a month. No headphones, because that was truly ideal.
That's the no headphones is the part.
Only two people talked to me the entire time, both old men, gray-haired, like Lotharios. Mm-hmm. One was on the track at Beeman Park and just kind of kept trying to talk to me, so I left. The other one was at came to his gate when he saw me walk by, said, and I quote, you're as good-looking as I am. Do you need to use my potty? I said, no, thanks. Those are the only two interactions I had all day.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
All right. What I did is I did none of the sort. I was very leisurely, but I did come across a Duran Duran. I have a love-hate relationship with Duran Duran because I love the guys in Duran Duran, some of the best guys I've ever interviewed.
But
and there are songs of theirs I like. But there's also songs of theirs I hate.
Like the hits?
This one was a hit. I came upon it listening to the 80s channel on Sirius XM on a like Saturday night dance party. And I heard this song, and I hadn't heard this one in a kajillion years. And I was like, I complain about Hall & Oates and Maneater. And there's many, many many songs that irked the shit out of me, but I forgot how bad this song was. Okay.
Wild Boys, right? Yes. How could you tell?
The worst thing I can say about a song is I don't really even think of it as a song.
More of a chant.
Wild Boys are calling on their way back from the fire. An August moon surrender to a dust cloud.
Number two for 4 weeks. How high in coke were we?
Like a three-song stop set at a strip club.
Yeah.
That's the only place you hear this.
It's always a big hit when I was 20. The 80s were worse than people remember.
They tried to break us. Looks like they'll try again. Wild Boys, never lose it. Wild Boys.
I don't know what you do with this song. Do you fuck? Do you fight? Do you dream of a dog that died from your childhood? When I take my walk, I'm going to obsess on this song for 12 hours.
It's homoerotic.
All Duran Duran stuff's homoerotic. All right. It's a non-song. It's a non-song. And it sucked. And here's what we need to learn. When everyone was, you know, in the grips of Duran Duran mania, and I grew up in Los Angeles, so people were like dressing in pirate shirts and putting on eyeshadow and stuff. And I was like, this is junk. This is shit. This Wild, all this stuff, it's junk. And all the people with the bad haircuts and the eyeliner were trying to explain to me it was good, yeah. And I didn't know what I was talking about. I was a heretic.
Yeah.
And I was going, shit. So when this song came on, I said to a person, this song's fucking horrible. It's horrible. And I did what I always do, which is I would have been thrown out of the band because I would, in 1984, if somebody, Simon Le Bon, gave me the sheet to this, I would have went, I don't know what the fuck this is. And they went, it's a song called Wild Boys. Oh, I get it. It says Wild Boys 128 times. This sounds like shit. Like,
I guess why?
I got into a band to fucking rock and to play music. And I grew up listening to like Motown and Jimi Hendrix and stuff. What the fuck is this? I would have pitched a fit and I would have said, I'm not doing it. Like, I wouldn't, if somebody came up with a horrifically unfunny sketch for me to do, I would just go, I'm not doing it.
I don't put my name on this.
I would get asked to do like the teen awards and the whatever award shows and whatever. And they'd load the prompter up with just shitty hackneyed jokes written by guys that had no business being in writer's rooms. And I'd go, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to go up there and make an asshole out of myself. So I would have definitely been thrown out of Duran Duran very early on. But the person gave the, and they do this same thing. It's going to be analogous to what's going on with COVID. Because they do this thing where they go, yeah, well, what were you listening to? And because the inference is you got sucked into it. You had the stupid Flock of Seagulls haircut. You had the fucking parachute pants.
You're the guy from Simply Red.
You were listening to that shit, too. Yeah. Don't tell me you weren't listening to that shit. And I said, fuck off. I was listening to John Hyatt. I went home and looked up. Play You May Already Be a Winner from 1983. These are the albums I bought. This is what I was listening to, assholes. Which, by the way, this didn't have to have been made in 1983. Could have been made yesterday or 1963. But Wild Boys, that's a timestamp. We know the day that song was made. Yeah, I had an album, John Hyatt, 1983, Riding with the King. Listen to the shit out of it. Know every song on it. There are no hits on it, per se, because that's what John Hyatt was. You just have to pick your favorite John Hyatt song.
But
And then in 1987, Bring the Family came about. In between, there was Wild Boys, but I announced that as fucking turkey shit.
This is great.
Smart, lyrically strong. It's got a great message, which is, you guys have heard it before, it's this broken down couple, and they get the Ed McMahon thing that says, you may already be a winner from the publisher's clearinghouse, and they're starting to make plans, you know.
This is the antithesis of just saying Wild Boys over and over again.
Yes, it's got nuance, it takes you somewhere, it's clever, it's funny, self-deprecating. Goes into reggae. Well, I've never counted my
chickens before they're high. A little ska.
And a little ska. There's always a catch, but I felt from the start that our hearts were the perfect match. All right, so.
Jim Pearl. How dare you? This is the anti-Nagel painting.
Nagel painting, yeah, which was a Duran Duran album cover.
That's right. But that was the whole thing. And I'm sure our guest Joel Stein will have thoughts on this. But, you know, like, this, it wasn't cool to make sense. You had to have, like, a horse wandering through a forest and shit, you know, like, mist for no reason, shit falling off tables in slow motion.
I'm just saying a mighty and hearty fuck right off to all of those who try to lump me into the shit styles and your shit cocaine-driven music from the fucking 80s. I was never down with it. I was listening to John Hyatt and Graham Parker in fucking high school. I can name all the fucking records. I never got my dick sucked once because of my love of John Hyatt, because no one knew who the fuck John Hyatt was. We all had to listen to Flock of Seagulls and Duran Duran, but it was a wholesale rejection on the part of the Ace Man. Wild Boys, I labeled when I was 19 and a half as pure, unmitigated shit, and it sounds worse now. So fuck off. Thank you.
Gun to your head over and over and over and over again. No off button. Hungry Like the Wolf or Girls on Film?
I'll go Girls on Film because it had a better beginning.
Interesting.
It got out of the gate okay with the camera firing off in the background. All right. Sad news breaking. Our buddy Jay Leno has been burnt in a fire. It had to do with an automobile. At least it's on point. I mean, like when I heard, because Chris just said Jade had a serious situation, I thought, well, the guy's 73. I don't know. Is it an illness or something?
That's all we knew.
Car stuff, fire. And I have been... I've said it many times. Every time I walk into Jay's shop, he's under a car, oftentimes under a steam car. I walked in once and he was underneath a steam car with a torch, with one of those butane torches used for sweating copper pipes, and a big plume of fire shot out. He like popped out and was like, oh boy.
And good thing he was wearing denim.
Yeah. So he puts himself in those situations a lot, and I guess this just got him.
Well, this wasn't steam.
No, I know the steam cars have to have a fire going, and I'm not saying he was even doing a steam car. I'm just saying there's a...
Because steam burns are fucking horrific, too.
Steam burns are the worst, I think, but this was fire, so we're praying for Jay. I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, this was a gas fire, he said. He said, I got some serious burns from a gasoline fire. I'm okay. Just need a week or two to get back on my feet.
He'll be very magnanimous about it. He'll blame himself, and he'll keep telling you he's okay. But also, bigger picture, you know, Jay does a lot of stuff where he puts himself in danger, rides a lot of motorcycles, has been in a funny car that's rolled over, we've chronicled on this show. He just does stuff. He jumps into a race car and has somebody go nuts, or he goes nuts. And so then you go, well, that's reckless or dangerous or something. And then you go, Well, the dude's 73 and he's out there fucking living his life.
Yeah.
So the point is if you want to fuck around with cars and you want to race cars and you want to hop into funny cars and you want to ride motorcycles, you've definitely upped your potential for shit happening. Or you could mount the sofa with the Corollas and ride that Barca lounger into the sunset, in which case there's not a lot of inherent danger, but you're missing a lot of upside,
yeah.
A lot of upside. And I would argue that even though you don't wish this upon Jay Leno, a smallish price to pay over the course of a lifetime of doing yeah. what he wanted to do when he wanted to do it.
Yeah. Better life.
All right. Joel Stein, our old friend and author, is going to join us. I had Chris dig up the old Man Show article he wrote when he was working for Time Magazine all those years ago. He's worked for everybody, so we'll get caught up with Joel Stein. First, I'll tell you about Simply Safe over the holidays. Burglaries, package thefts, they all spike. Our friends at Simply Safe Home Security are offering 50% off their award-winning security system. Order your system for half off today and enjoy advanced security and more peace of mind this holiday season. This is a great company with a great product. We all use it here. You can put it in your apartment like Dawson, and when it comes time to be a homeowner, you pick it up and move with it, which you cannot say for a traditional security system. Named Best Home Security System 2022 by U.S. News and World Report, third year in a row. 24/7 professional monitoring. Agents use SimpliSafe's exclusive fast protection technology to capture evidence and verify that the threat is real for a faster police response. Under a buck a day and a lot cheaper than ADT. It is Simply Safe, right, Dawson?
Don't miss your chance to save big on the only security system we recommend. Get 50% off any new Simply Safe system at simplysafe.com/Adam today. This is their biggest discount of the year, so don't wait. That's simplysafe.com/Adam. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
So what I was saying about bad boys is...
Wild Boys?
Wild Boys. I was thinking of the Sean Penn movie. You got to stop wherever you're at, and no matter how loud society's yelling at you to get on board with things, you have to go, yeah, but this is shit. So as much as people yelled at me that masks were going to save us all, the second I saw everyone on airplanes taking them off to eat snacks, I was like, all right, that's bullshit.
We all lived.
And then everyone yelled at me for another 2 years, yeah. But I was like, it's bullshit. I saw it. I'm sitting here. This song's bullshit. That mask is bullshit. There's a lot of stuff's bullshit. Now, you're going to get yelled at during the time.
Yeah.
And then later on, people will either accuse you of going along with it, or they'll do this thing where they'll go, well, nobody knew. Nobody knew. I got fucking ears. I listened to shit when I was 19 and a half. I was like, this sucks donkey dick. And I was out that moment. All right. Joel Stein, author and journalist, is going to join us right after this. Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico Easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hey, Corolla Drinks fans. We've got a special anniversary coming up. November marks the 10-year anniversary of Mangria. To celebrate this milestone and, more importantly, the support that the fans have given us, we're excited to announce each and every bottle of Mangria and 33 wines during the month of November is $10 only. That's right. Head to CorollaDrinks.com and get your bottles for only $10. The holidays are coming. Thank you so much for supporting us over the past decade. It really means the world to us. We love you guys. Happy holidays from all of us at Corolla Drinks.
The Adam Carolla Show presents Joel Stein's birthday cocktail party for July 23rd. Let's see who's on the guest list. Let's welcome Baseball Hall of Fame pitcher and former L.A. Dodger, Don Drysdale. Legendary radio talk show host, Don Imus. The guy who performed that really stupid song called Rock On
David Essex. Hey kids, rock and roll, rock on. Guitarist from Bachman Turner Overdrive, Blair Thornton. Woody Harrelson is here. So is Martin Gore from Depeche Mode. It's Slash from Guns N' Roses. Philip Seymour Hoffman is here. The current senator from the great state of Georgia, Raphael Warnock. Alison Krauss is here. So is Monica Lewinsky, Omar Epps, Catherine Hahn. From Destiny's Child, Michelle Williams, Daniel Radcliffe, and the first drummer for the greatest band that ever existed, the precursor to Neil Peart, or Peart, whatever, from Rush, John Rutsey. Joel Stein is on the Adam Carolla Show.
Good to see you, Joel.
How weird and nice. Do you also give away my social security number and my address?
That's
like, what else
right.
happens here?
You're getting doxxed. Story of the Week with Joel Stein, and that's a podcast, and it's out wherever you listen to finer podcasts. They choose an article that fascinates him, and then he has the writer in to tell him all about it, which makes sense.
It's like those long New Yorker articles that aren't on the news that take a long time to read and people aren't reading. We just have the person, the writer, come on, and we talk it through. So you don't have to read, because reading's hard. Which is why I have a podcast now.
Yeah.
You don't to read.
Yeah. Well, reading is kind of stationary and the Audible is sort of movement
based. That's exactly right.
And
yeah.
So many people are just out and about that they're literally not
taking
sitting
12
around
hour walks.
Taking
That's right.
12 hour walks.
You can't read during those.
You started with Martha Stewart back in the day?
I did. This was around the time of Wild Boys, which I think is not as bad as The Reflex.
Duran Duran has some bad ones, and we can go over those bad ones, Chris. But Wild Boys was
worse
never
than The Reflex. Okay,
The Reflex at least moves, has something, goes somewhere.
A beginning, middle, and thankfully
yes,
an end.
Yes, but there is a Duran Duran song I do hate equally with Wild Boys.
Do you know what it is?
Chris will find me. All they have to do is find me the greatest hits and.
That's The Reflex.
It's pretty bad. Yeah, this I do hate this song quite a bit. Yeah, it's bad.
This sounds like the music you play when you're trying to get a cult
yeah.
out of the house.
I do hate this song a lot.
Oh, yeah, it's a little more melodic here, though. You're right.
It's got more yeah. going on. Hungry Like a Wolf's Bad, A View to Kill's Like Fine. Yeah, that's some...
I don't mind A View to Kill.
But the why part is pretty grating.
You know, I grew up in the 80s in New Jersey, mm-hmm. and it was much more homophobic than L.A. when you grew up. So
yeah.
it was not okay as a guy to say you like Duran Duran at all.
Oh.
Yeah, no, that's... Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
and I don't think we even knew why. It was
beating.
Just in the water. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Well, nobody would come out and say they were gay back then.
Oh, no, if you asked me if I had any gay friends... We had a friend who we called Fruity,
mm-hmm.
and very gay guy,
mm-hmm.
did theater, like that super gay guy. If you had asked any of us if he was gay, we'd be like, no.
Yeah. So,
yeah, no one in my class was gay. It turns out tons of people in my class were gay.
Yeah. Well, because back then you could act gay without being gay. Although I don't know if that's as possible.
I think they were gay.
Possible
I think
anymore.
They were all gay.
Well, that's
yeah.
what, in our minds.
Oh, yeah. No, they weren't actually. Being gay was like some leather guy in the West Village who
yes.
we'd never, ever meet. They
yeah.
weren't in our school. It was like being in Iran today where they'll tell you no one's gay.
Right.
Yeah.
Chechnya.
Yeah.
Right.
For most of the world, yeah.
yeah.
Statistically, Union of the Snake, yeah. I do hate Union of the Snake, too.
I don't know if I know Union of the Snake.
Oh, you will.
Snake.
They're sonically... They're one of these bands that sounds like... Everything sounds like it's a demo tape, but it's missing the rest of the song.
Here's all you need to know. Their wives started Juicy Couture.
What?
Right?
Really?
Yeah, I think I interviewed them at some point.
I know the girl who started Juicy.
What's her name? Her last name's like...
Janie LaPatti. Well, now we got to figure out who
yeah.
started Juicy.
Sorry.
I'm
going
to go with my friend Janie. All right. I'm having PTSD here. So, Joel, of course, I met at the Man Show
yes.
many years ago when you were writing for Time Magazine.
I was writing for Time Magazine, and Daniel Kellison asked me if I'd work for the Man Show. Danny Two Sheets. And he, my then living girlfriend, said, if you move to LA for this job, we won't be together.
Oh, I thought you were gay.
Yeah, everyone thought I was gay. She thinks I'm gay. Well, now I record my podcast in my closet because that's what they suggest.
Oh, yeah.
And my wife and son, very liberal, spend the entire day making homophobic jokes about me being in the closet.
Being in the closet.
Mm-hmm. All day.
Mm-hmm. Juicy, founded by Pamela Skase, Levy, and Jella Nash. She married John Taylor. Okay. So there you go. Where does Janie LaPatty pull factor in this? All right. So when I started the Man Show,
yes.
Jimmy and I didn't know any writers. We were like kind of radio guys, and we didn't have any New York connections. And so Daniel was like, I know all these New York comedians and writers and stuff, and I'll hire these guys to move out here and fill the writer's room.
But that worked out well, right? No? I don't know.
Jimmy and I ended up writing most everything, with the exception of a few guys. It's always – the writer's room is – it's a little microcosm of society. It's 12 guys. Two of them are doing all the work, and the other 10 are complaining that they're not getting more, even though they're not contributing.
I couldn't take the job, but I was out in L.A. because I was supposed to interview Craig Kilborn, who had taken over the late-night CBS spot.
Mm-hmm.
And Craig, we had a date scheduled to go do this interview for Time Magazine, and he kept pushing it back.
Mm-hmm.
I was out there for, I think, 2 weeks or so waiting
Craig Kilborn.
Well, he promised me we'd have an interview, and he didn't cancel. He just kept pushing the date back. So I was living at the Chateau Marmont, working for you guys as a second job, because who was going to catch me, taking another paycheck. And then eventually you guys did like a practice interview with Kilborn, and you took me with you guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
God, I don't have any recollection.
Yeah, like before his show came on, you guys did a practice interview. So I went, and that's as close as I wound up getting Kilborn. Like, he was supposed to take me to like an NC2A game because he was going to be promoting the show there. I don't know why. He just kept blowing me off.
He was kind of famously douchey.
Mm. I didn't even get close enough to find out.
That was the that was the rap.
I think there were tells.
Yeah.
Like pushing you off for 2 weeks.
Yeah, that wasn't great.
At least you're at the Chateau Marmont.
Oh, it was a great 2 weeks. I worked for him. I watched them like prank him with a Subway sandwich from
Natalie Maines.
The
Dixie Chicks. Yeah, you were there for that.
I was so confused because I was dressed even more dorky than this. And then all these writer guys were like, what's up with your shoes? Like, why do you have wooden shoes?
Wooden shoes.
And I was like, because they all had sneakers and I was wearing like patent leather soles and they couldn't understand. It was like I was from a foreign nation when I arrived there.
But this is how Neanderthalish they are. They thought they were wooden shoes.
Yeah.
The wooden soles, right?
Right.
Yeah. They're dress shoes. So we were in our first bungalow there on Hollywood Center Studio, right?
Yeah.
And what are your recollections about the Dixie Chicks prank?
Well, I was aware of it before you were. So I was part of the – I mean, I didn't do anything. I was just told about it as it went on.
Yeah. What were you told initially? And this would have been in like 99, right?
It
was chronicled in your Time article from 99.
Oh, right.
Which would have been later in 99. So it must have been sometime in 99.
My memory is that there had been some pranking going on both sides. I think you maybe put Jimmy Kimmel's car in an ad – like a want ad to sell his car. So people were showing up at his house and calling him.
That would be probably his cousin Sal. And he was doing that a lot with Jeff Ross.
Okay.
Too. He was constantly going after Jeff Ross. But yes, Jimmy's car got put up for sale.
Yeah. So I think there was some revenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't know how it started, but it started very small.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was some small prank played on you about Natalie Maine, and you didn't seem to their surprise, to see through it. So they kept pushing it further and further.
They upped the ante.
And they didn't know how far it could go because they thought it was over every time.
Well, she'd set the table by asking me to the Grammys.
Well, legitimately, yes.
Yeah, so there was plausibility.
And you had a girlfriend.
Yes.
Which she probably didn't know when she asked you.
Yes. And I was like, I talked to my manager's gay assistant. I said, well, how does this work? I have a girlfriend, and I'm going to the Grammys with someone. And he goes, oh, that's what people do it all the time. Like, that's how they do it.
Is that true? No.
I don't know.
You asked an assistant
I think he
for, like, life advice.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't know. I didn't know anything about Hollywood etiquette, you know what I mean? And he worked for a talent management company.
But he was like 22, right?
Yeah, but there is as much downside as there may be being gay. There's a kind of a shaman-like upside where they're like, go, should I wear this shirt with these slacks? Oh, please, no, don't do it. And you'll let some 22-year-old guy go to your closet, pick up a, tell you what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, like what you can't do. Like, if I'm at a bar, am I allowed to order a drink like for a girl? No, never. And the guy's 22 and he's an idiot. He makes $14,000 a year, but I'm hanging on every word. So he explained to me that this was totally fine and that this happens all the time in Hollywood. So
was that accurate? No, right?
I have no way of verifying.
We still don't know.
We still don't know. Okay. But I ended up at the Grammys with Natalie from the Dixie Chicks.
And she didn't make a move on you?
No, but yep. They won the Grammy.
So that, they panned right over.
They won, yeah. Oh. They won new album, a new artist of the year, like new whatever, 99.
And then in reality, she never contacted you again.
No, she I contacted her because Jimmy and Danny and you passively were
very passive, yeah.
Right? But you didn't raise your hand and object to what
true.
Was going
That's
on.
True.
You didn't take a stand. You were like you weren't a Nazi. You weren't a Jew.
Exactly.
You were just
That's
someone
right.
who was
yeah,
getting, going
German
about their
citizen,
way
yeah.
in 1939, just keeping his nose clean. The heroes of the war. So. Their first salvo was a bouquet of flowers.
That's right.
And the bouquet had a nice note from Natalie, like, had a great time last night. Thank you so much. And I think her phone number was on there. And as I recall, I called her and I said, got the flowers. Thank you very much. And I was driving into Loveline or something. And she said, oh, I'm in my bedroom right now, and I'm watching you on MTV.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, she's in her panties watching me on MTV. Like, she literally said, I'm watching you as I called up. And I was like, okay, well, thanks for the flowers, you know? And she was like, you're welcome. And I was like, she didn't say I didn't send flowers. She thought her publicist, oh, who would deny that thing?
No, that's it. Yeah.
Right. So she went, yeah, no problem. And I said, okay, well, you know. Next time you're in LA, you know, come do the radio show or something. She's like, yeah, okay. And I hung up the phone. I remember thinking, God, she's in her bedroom watching me right now. She watched Loveline on MTV.
Lots of people did. Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
So then the next day, the giant cookie showed up, I think.
There was another step after that.
It kept going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing I remember is a giant, like one of those submarine sandwiches that take
six
up the whole table.
Six foot sub,
which at this point is something that a woman doesn't really send the guy she's interested in.
No. Agreed.
But you were like, oh, God damn it. How am I going to tell her I have a girlfriend? She's sending me submarine sandwiches. She's trying to get to my heart through my stomach.
Well, I thought at that point, I don't know what I was thinking, but I'll say, first off, the sub was from Giamella's, and I remember going, I love that place. How did you know
that? Amazing.
We'd go for lunch runs there all the time. So, the other thing I should have known is all the writers who would always be talking about what they were going to do for lunch, everyone just came walking in with paper plates. Like, I was like, you guys seem poised.
There was no subtlety to this whole thing at all. I think there was no expectation that it would work.
There was a sign. Yeah. In the sandwich, it said, I will not be ignored.
What's wrong with you? You're usually so good at this.
I thought, well.
But she was insane?
No. The reason Natalie invited me to be her date for the Grammys was because I said to her, why me? Like, I like the Dixie Chicks. I've never talked to you guys. Like, I have no contact with you. Why me? You know?
Well, you hadn't met her until the date?
No.
That's weird.
She just invited me. She wanted me to be her escort.
Has that happened to you with
Never.
Anyone else?
Oh. No.
Not
All
since?
The time.
Okay.
Not just Fran Drescher. No, nobody. Nothing. And never. And she said, well, I was watching you on MTV one night, and I heard you tell a story, and it made me laugh so much that I was in.
And so I could see why you asked the assistant to them. This is real Hollywood stuff.
So yeah. I said, well, what what story are you talking about? And she said, well, you said you were telling a story about driving your car. And he had a girl in the passenger seat, and she was like, just gone out on a few dates, and you're used to being single, and you weren't thinking about it, and you let a fart go, and your hand instinctively wafted it up toward your face.
Oh, you thought you could control the air flow towards your face.
It was more
her. That's gentlemanlike.
No, this is more reflexive.
Yeah.
Oh, you just do that whenever you fart.
Just being a baboon.
It's like a boxer. Sometimes they're knocked out and they're knocked out. They're on the ground and their hands are still like punching. You know what I mean? Like right. From their back because it's just your brain. My hand. I wafted so many farts at my own face while I was driving.
Wait, so normally when you—I don't do this. Normally when you fart—
Well, that's why everyone thinks you're gay.
Normally when you fart. Normally when straight men fart. Mm-hmm. And they've got the reflex turned up as loud as possible. They take their fart and they try and smell as much of it. Is this to check for disease? Like, what are you doing?
Unclear.
Okay.
But I will.
Just
for
get
me,
to know yourself
for me,
better.
It was like when you see a dog turn in a circle three times and then lay down and it's on artificial sod, you know, and you go, what? You go, that's what a dog does. That's what
so
I
this
did
is
with
what,
my.
All the straight men are doing this.
Well, let's see. We can get a survey. I'm saying it's like.
It's the first I've heard of
for
this.
For me, it was like getting in a car and always being used to driving a manual. And then getting into an automatic, and my hand just grabbed for this imaginary stick shift, you know.
So it was the first time a woman was in your car?
It was very infrequent that they're in the car. And so I let a fart go, and my hand just moved toward my face. And the woman I was driving with, and this is the part that Natalie liked.
She didn't like the initial part?
She asked me to go with her to the Grammys based on this story that she went, I want to be with that guy. Okay. So the woman I was with objected. She said, what are you
to
doing?
To the fart or the
hand?
Your own
the
fart.
Hand
yeah,
one.
I'm with
yeah,
her.
I love
I'm
that we're
her.
All saying, like, the fart's cool, but the hand
fart's
is a
great.
Bridge too far.
Yeah.
So she said, what are you doing with your hand? Like, what are you going to do with your hand? And then I got really straight. And I just looked at her and I go, I'm operating a motor vehicle. You want me to tuck my head between my legs? We're going 45 miles an hour. Use your brain, sweetheart. And Natalie loved that punchline or whatever it was. So I knew that Natalie had a kooky, scatological, fucked up sensibility.
Right.
Because she told me I invited you because of your fart story.
And then on the actual date, you didn't fart once?
I didn't move my hand.
Okay.
I had to physically sat on my hand at the Grammys because I was scared that I
must have smelled that hand.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so I got that she was a little off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, so she's off enough to send you a submarine sandwich.
I thought that was her making a joke. Like, right. I thought she got caught kind of coming on to me, and I told her, hey, I got a girlfriend,
right.
And she did it as a joke of like, now I'm stalking you with this sub sandwich. I thought it was
your pot committed.
I thought it was a goof.
Yeah.
It was presented to me as Adam thinks a famous attractive woman likes him. Ha ha ha. That can't
I know.
Happen.
The jokes are always the lowest. You know, whatever casts me in the worst light possible.
Yeah, that's how I was.
This is not that. This is her stalking
they
me.
They never told me about the not to defend my Nazi collaboration, but they never
this
told
is worse,
me.
But
about
go ahead.
They never told me about the fart wafting story.
Of course. First off. What do you think? So I'm just sitting around and, oh, this is a pie from Gina Lola Brigida. Oh, she must love me. Oh, I'm getting my dick sucked tonight by guess who? Gina Lola Brigida. Like, Anne Margaret's come in. She's brought you flip-flops. Like,
you're not 90. What are these, these are references before you were born?
Pansy Dickinson.
Big name from my past. My point is, no, I didn't think random, famous, hot women liked me. It was based on her asking me out.
Right.
Refresh our memory. What was the final straw for either of you?
I mean, there was a submarine sandwich, right?
Well, no, there was after the submarine sandwich. That was the lingerie. That was the panties.
Mm.
Oh, I think I was there for that, too.
That was the panties in a box.
And then what made you clue into the fact that that wasn't hers?
Nothing.
Oh, they just ran out of ideas.
They couldn't take it anymore.
They borrowed panties from a receptionist.
They couldn't sport like $7 and buy like.
Well, was that part of it?
Oh, you know I think mean? You're right. The man yeah. show was a little. Yeah. I remember I got
I
to the man
know,
show,
but the note said we need to fuck now, and you need to call me, and that's when Jimmy encouraged me to call her.
And then you said this has to end.
Wait, yeah, that's when I called her.
And at what point did she say this is you're crazy?
It unraveled sort of item by item. She was at a Pottery Barn with her mom when she picked up the phone.
That much lives of celebrities.
I know.
And so at some point, and what did you feel as you're figuring this out?
Well, I was figuring it out as it was going. Mm-hmm. And then, and I started to sort of look up and I started to notice that the writers had filed into the room Jimmy was standing on his desk filming me with a camcorder. And that was the clue. That's when it started to dawn.
And have you talked to Natalie since then?
Yeah, she came on. She came on Loveline 6 months later and brought like a 6 foot subset.
That's great.
That's her. She got that sense of humor.
So when you realized on the phone that this was all a sham, did you double down and go, oh, "I knew that," or did you go, oh, "Boy, do I have egg on my face"?
I was trying so hard to process all that was going on over the past several days and weeks that I wasn't fully able to process it in real time. So I was having difficulty expressing myself. I was very confused.
All the better for Jimmy's tape.
Oh, yeah.
But Joel, I love that you were there for this.
This is the
corroborating
kind of,
everything.
This is the kind of thing we cover every week on Story of the Week. We take a story like this. Mm-hmm. We get the person who reported it to break it down, and I ask annoying questions.
What are some of the stories you cover?
Next week, we have this story from Los Angeles Magazine that's do you know about this group called The Order? They're this Mormon sect that's super racist, polygamist. And
they're not the ones living in Mexico, are they?
No, this is a different one. They're in Utah, but on the border of Idaho. Mm-hmm. And they kind of run this incredible – their main thing is government fraud, mostly welfare mm-hmm. scams. And there's one really smart guy in the order. I'm sure there's plenty. But this guy got a chemical engineering PhD from the University of Utah, mm-hmm. started making biofuel. Mm-hmm. But then figured out that there was these government subsidies at like $1 a gallon for mm-hmm. biofuel. Mm-hmm. And so he started pretending to move biofuel around the country and mm-hmm. getting $1 per gallon. And then he hooks up with the guy who runs the Armenian Mafia in Glendale.
Oh, yeah.
This guy, the Lion.
Well, no, I know this story because Mark Garagos.
Oh, yeah. He's defending the Lion.
He's defending the
Lion. Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
Yeah. All you have to be is Armenian and
come to the
Garagos
rescue.
Will come swinging in like Tarzan with a briefcase.
And the story gets crazier and crazier. Like the dirty FBI guys who are supposed to be at Homeland Security instead are letting in criminals into this country. But the best part is at the end when the Armenian Mafia guy and the Mormon Mafia guy, the Mormon biofuel guy, are in jail together. And it turns out the Mormon guy's third wife has the hots for the Armenian mob guy. And so she starts visiting him instead.
Sending him sub sandwiches and whatnot.
Exactly.
Dirty underwear.
And you don't like one-third cuckold a guy. So he got really upset and turned on the Armenian guy.
Wow.
Yeah. But there's like 10 twists like that in the story.
Yeah, I just know bits and pieces of the story from talking of Garagos about
it. It's a crazy story. Yeah, but it's so easy to find these crazy stories no one's reading because they're because they're long.
Right.
And they take like 6 months to report and they're full of detail. And we simplify them a little bit and tell them in like a half hour.
Is there a business to be a reporter for Time Magazine anymore? I mean, it used to be a career and I feel like...
That's what I felt like. I felt like I write and I feel like it's the equivalent of, I don't know, writing, being an epic poet. You know, like no one wants to read anymore. So there's not as much of a career as there used to be.
Is it... by the way, at a relaxed pace, you should be able to cover 24 miles in 12 hours.
Okay, well, I did 11 hours, mm-hmm. so I'll take that as a win.
How many miles did you do?
About almost 21.
Wow.
Thank you.
No, I didn't congratulate you.
God damn it.
Yeah, I mean, are people like heading over to Substack and places like that?
Or? Yeah, but Substack is just people yelling about politics. We are not doing like the news or politics. We're doing
Substack is mostly or almost all political.
I don't know. It's all kinds of things. I'm sure if you're really into cars, there's car Substack.
Ooh.
I'm guessing. I don't really know. that seemed to have faded Substack.
But in general, that profession of a reporter isn't what it was.
It's a smaller field. You know, The New Yorker still comes out. There's other magazines that still come out. But yeah, there's fewer outlets than there used to be, for sure.
Well, and certainly for what you're talking about, like these kind of longer think pieces, as opposed to like clickbait, headline, click. Well,
we're not doing any think pieces. We're just doing like super, like we did a story about the guy who's like the guy you go to in Mexico, this doctor who became a crack addict and then cured himself by smoking toad.
And then
he gave like a TEDx talk at Burning Man about smoking toad, which sounds like a fake sentence about liberals. But he
what's
then,
toad?
Oh, it's oh. Have you ever seen? There's a great clip of Mike Tyson talking about smoking toad on Joe Rogan because it really changes lives. It's a hallucinogenic drug that you get these Sonoran desert toads,
toad.
Yeah. And they're actually somewhat in trouble now because they're being harvested. But you grab these toads at night when they come out in Sonora and maybe New Mexico or somewhere close to the border, and you pop their little those bumpy parts on the skin, and you pop them like zits onto a piece of glass, and you dry the zit cream, and then you crystallize and smoke it. And it's a super – like the Michael Pollan book where he talks about – all the hallucinogenic drugs he does, that's the one that freaked him out the most. That's like the Mount Everest of hallucinogens. It's super short. It's like 10 to 15 minutes, but it's pretty much ego dissolving. You just physically collapse on the ground and you're just at one with nothingness.
Do you think, because everyone's talking about microdosing and shrooms, and we want to make shrooms legal in Oregon and all
this
kind of stuff?
I've been invited to shroom parties. I thought it was a normal party, and then like a few days before, like, we just want to talk to you before you come out about what we're going to be doing. I'm like, oh, okay, it's just a party. And then I find out, oh, it's a shroom party.
Oh, really? No, yeah. I'm not. But do you guys – here's my hypothesis, which I've never really thought about, which is this is all the rage. And back when times were simpler, back before the earbuds and the pods and, people walked and they were sort of in nature all the time. And they had these like – I was watching this show on – I don't know what it was on. It was maybe Netflix over the weekend, but it was Survive or Alone or whatever. They take a bunch of different people, maybe like five people. They just drop them off on some island and – British Columbia next to a lake or a river, and you get some fishing string and a flare, and you're just at it. You're just on. And then whoever makes it the most days, alone.
Wasn't this what Survivor was supposed to be?
Yeah.
But everyone's broken off. There's no tribe.
Is anyone naked or afraid?
No one's naked, but everyone's afraid because there's like grizzly bears and stuff. And then you watch these people. It's like, well, they build a shelter. It's like the first thing they do. And then they just get up in the morning and they go, today I'm going to collect a bunch of river rocks and I'm going to try to put a fireplace in my shelter. And that's what I got to do today. And they make fish traps and they make snares for rabbits. And all they have to do the entire day is go check the snares, get a rabbit, clean the rabbit. Now I got to make rabbit jerky. So I'm going to try to smoke the rabbit. That's all. And in nature. And that's it. That's all they do. There's no texting. There's no arguing. There's no horns honking. There's no backup beepers. There's no politicians arguing or whatever. And I realized, okay, this is what we're supposed to be. This is kind of where we're supposed to be, or some version of it, closer to it. Now everyone's just being inundated with everything all the time. It's just this montage of craziness. And I think people are moving toward these hallucinogens to make it stop. And that's why they say, I took it and it changed my whatever, because you got off this merry-go-round. So we weren't meant for this life this fast.
It's like a factory reset.
Yes.
I think there's probably two different parts going on. One is if you look at the 50s when people started getting into LSD, which were mostly like conservative Henry Luce kind of Manhattanites, Aldous Huxley, they weren't trying to escape something. They were trying to dissolve their ego to have a new perspective. The same way when you meditate, you get outside of yourself and it gives you a new perspective and you realize that other things exist in the world and you're just part of it. Separately, I think people become anxious. I don't think, I know, people become more anxious and depressed when they're not physically social with each other. Mm-hmm. And this might be a way of trying to like make, as meditation is similarly a way to make some of that pain and anxiety go away. But another way is just to hang out with people. Mm-hmm. Maybe a different way. Not, they don't do exactly the same
thing. But a lot of it is trying to reset themselves, right? Because yeah. not everyone's doing it. I'm not talking about a party. I'm just talking about the people that are.
No. But I think part of why they want to reset themselves is if you look at suicide rates, which is a really good way to measure anxiety and depression, they're crazy in Western advanced cultures, right? Mm-hmm. Partly, I think, ever since TVs came out, people started spending a lot more time with their family in their house. So there's some good with that, obviously. Like you spend more time with their kids, but people stopped going to the bar and the Elks Club, and this is more men, but people stop socializing in the same way, and they're just in their house all the time. And I think that's messing with your anxiety levels.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is the cure for that, but it is like a way to get out of your own head, which you can get really into if you're on your phone all day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think the moral of today's show is you got to get out of your routine a little bit. You can't.
You got to hang out with people.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry.
I mean, the fact that I was coming here today, people were like, you're not Zooming the podcast? I'm like, I hope not.
No, you're right. There's two things. You need to be with people. I was talking to this life coach, doctor, you know, PhD, whatever. And this the other day on my Take a Knee podcast. And he said, you know, it turns out drinking is good for you. And I said, oh, please, drinking good for you. And he said, well, not the drinking part, the part where you're with people.
The socializing.
Socializing and drinking. And I said to him, wow, that's really weird because the thing that I look forward to when I circle something on the calendar these days is Sunday football with the boys.
Yeah.
It's Cousin Sal and Kevin Hench and all those guys from the Man Show and everything. And we're all getting together and most of us are drinking beers. And I go, it's like I crave it. It's weird, but I feel guilty because it's such a waste of time. It's like, it's literally an entire day. I bring my son with me now and blah, blah, blah. We ride the electric bikes there. We, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, I do feel kind of like an asshole because it's a day lost. Like all I'm doing is sitting there eating pizza, drinking beer, laughing it up. And he goes, no, you crave that because it's so important.
Yeah.
Like it's, you need it. And I'm like, it is weird. I need it. I feel like I need it, but I feel stupid because I'm just sitting around getting drunk with my friends.
This drive to productivity is also messed up. It's not like we're skinning a rabbit and building a shelter that we need tonight. Like you've got plenty of money. Like, and you're also, no offense, not saving lives, right?
Yes.
Like the fact that you're not productive for a day is not a huge loss.
No, it's probably a net gain for society. Keep that guy away from a microphone.
But you know what I mean? It's like it's okay for you to like.
It is.
Yeah.
I would not give myself permission to do it. I thought. I mean,
but it's
no.
Weird.
I gave myself permission to do it because I do it. But what I mean is
to
is
feel
I,
good about
I
it.
I beat myself up because I'm like, you're sitting around
but
on
you
your.
You should
ass.
Be making a podcast. Like, what is the alternative that you think is like?
It was like you should be getting exercise, or you should
wrenching
be
on something.
You should be fixing something that a picture that needs to be hung. You should have hung it.
If you looked
you know?
At the rates of how long you're going to live, like exercise is very important. Diet's very important. Socialization is almost equally important.
That's the thing. And that's why he was like, booze is good for you because you all get together and consume it in a group and you all laugh together and whatever. And I was like, good. Never thought of it that way. But also then I think the moral of the story is, Chris, do you have one of those waterfoil things? Is Dunham here? No.
No, not yet.
Oh, okay. So I walk. Well, okay. So both ends of the spectrum then. I think the good news is, or what we can glean from this is go out and take a 12-hour walk alone without your earbuds in and see where your mind goes. And then get together with people, socialize, have a drink, and have a laugh. Like it's kind of both, you know.
But it's interesting, 12 hours alone, this is almost like a silent meditation. I know you're going to see a bunch of stuff and walk by things, mm-hmm. but mostly you're going to be alone.
Yes.
And one of the most painful things you can do to a human being is lock them in isolation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right? I completely agree. I think what I'm talking about is kind of diversity. What I'm saying is after 7 hours of drinking beer and laughing with dudes, then I need a long walk the following morning in nature minus the beer. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm sort of saying. Like, I got up this morning. I was in Malibu this morning, and I just got up and I said, I'm going in the ocean just alone. I'm just going to walk. It's cold.
Yeah. That's what he likes about it.
But it's okay. Good. It's good for you.
Polar bear clothes.
And there's not another human being.
I know he likes that.
There's not another human being in the ocean. There was nobody. There's nobody anywhere. And I just walked down there and just floated in the ocean this morning. And when I was walking out, I found one guy. There was one guy, and he had one of those foil boards, those electric ski air water foil boards, the ones that
those are cool
ones that come up
Danny
on the
McBride in
you kind of bounce on it
and I was like, when we talked, we like stopped and talked, and I talked battery life and blah blah blah, and I was like, where are you going with this thing? And he's like, I go all the way down to like the colonies down to Zuma and stuff, and I turn around. And so then the question is this guy better alone, or is this a group activity? Like, I think in his head and in my head, I'm going to float in the ocean alone.
No,
I would have
nice.
Done it with somebody if they wanted to, but it's not a lot of takers. The water's too cold. But this guy's just going off. It was Monday morning, just by his lonesome. I'm going to sit on this foil board, and I'm just going for a trek down the coast with the wind in my hair.
Yeah, without a screen. That's the important
part. Without anything.
Yeah.
And I thought, God bless you. And then what you should do is get together with friends tonight and talk about it.
Yeah, no, you need all of that, right?
Right.
You need to see what's in your head.
Right. And I think that, I don't think it's one or the other. I think it's all of the above.
I did this thing for GQ years ago where I got in really, really good shape with the trainer, the guy who trains a lot of the actors for superhero movies, this guy, Harley Pasternak. And he had a list of things I had to do every day. So what I had to eat, what I had, my workout. It was also 12,000 steps. Mm-hmm. But it was also an hour a day, like without screens, alone, kind of just walking outside, being in nature.
That was part of it.
Yeah, it made a difference.
Really?
Yeah.
What did it do for you?
It just lowered your stress, anxiety. I don't know the hormonal part of it, but it just like reset you, like you said.
Well, if people want to know if you're kind of stressed out, we're all stressed out, go for a long walk. And don't bring your phone.
Yeah. Well, I did that in my neighborhood. So I did this thing where I went to, for an article, I went to up near Microsoft in Redmond. And there was a rehab facility for dudes who were addicted to the internet or addicted to being online, mm-hmm. which sounds fake and sounds stupid until I got there. And it was all, I thought it was going to be like porn and stuff like that. It was all video game guys. Mm-hmm. They're all in their early 20s. They all had like, they'd gone to Emory and been on the soccer team. They all had these kind of successful lives until they got addicted to like World of Warcraft or whatever it was big mm-hmm. then. And then they were just like wearing diapers on a cat, alone, having to fulfill their mission and getting Mountain Dew and Domino's sent into their apartment.
Right.
Their lives had totally fallen apart. So I wasn't allowed to have a phone for 3 days when I was up there. And it totally changed my attitude towards my phone. So I was like, I'm not going to carry my phone around. I'm going for a walk in my neighborhood without a phone. I proceeded within 20 minutes, completely lost in my own neighborhood, and had to find my way home, which was really pathetic. And I eventually realized I was near a friend's house, went to his doorbell, pressed the ring button, and his like nanny didn't know who I was and wouldn't let me in. Had to walk to a Gelson's supermarket and ask if I could borrow the phone and call my wife.
Wow.
Yeah, and just to tell her, I know where I am now, but I've been gone for a few hours for a reason.
The nanny probably saw the guy in the wingtip shoes with the wooden soles
the wooden
and was like, I don't trust this guy.
He's probably trying to sell me something.
Selling Fuller brushes.
That's right.
Joel Stein, everyone. Story of the week with Joel Stein. And you can find it wherever you listen to finer podcasts. And you can check out his website as well, thejoelstein.com as well. And you shoot him a tweet at thejoelstein as well. Jeff Dunham, one of the nicest guys in comedy, is going to join us in a moment.
Will he be here physically?
He's physically here today.
Does he bring the puppets?
Well, we can step out and ask him yourself.
This is exciting.
We'll do that right after this.
All month long on Pluto TV, stream the biggest Tyler Perry movies free. Watch your favorites like Madea's Witness Protection and Madea's Big Happy Family. Join Tyler Perry as he goes on a couples retreat with Sharon Leal in Why Did I Get Married? Or Idris Elba and Gabrielle Union in the Tyler Perry directed film Daddy's Little Girls. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows available on live and on demand. Download the free Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.